The streets of Kingston in the early 1980s did not just carry the scent of exhaust and roasting corn. They carried the weight of a fundamental shift in the Jamaican soul. The smoke from the 1980 election had barely cleared, leaving behind over 800 dead and a landscape fractured by political tribalism. But as the new decade took hold, the old guard of political patronage began to lose its grip. The gunmen who once fought for the green of the Jamaica Labor Party, or the orange of the People's National Party, realized they no longer needed a politician's permission to exert power. They had discovered a product more lucrative than any government contract. Cocaine was moving north from South America, and Jamaica sat directly in the path of the most profitable trade route in human history. This was the birth of the internationalized Jamaican organized crime structure, a system that would come to be known globally as the Shower Posse. The transition was swift and brutal. In communities like Tivoli Gardens and Jungle, the figure of the politician was replaced by the figure of the Don. These men were not just enforcers. They became the shadow government. They paid school fees, settled domestic disputes, and provided a sense of order in places where the state had retreated. The money was no longer coming from small-scale local extortion. It was flowing in from the streets of New York, Miami, and London. The Shower Posse, named for the way they showered their enemies with bullets, established a sophisticated network that spanned the diaspora. They were no longer just local thugs. They were international businessmen with a paramilitary edge. This shift created a new social contract. The garrison communities became fortresses where loyalty was bought with drug money and maintained through absolute discipline. Our history shows us that this was not just a criminal evolution. It was a structural collapse of the post-colonial dream. The independence promised in 1962 felt distant as the island's economy struggled under the weight of debt and structural adjustment. For a young man in a garrison, the choice was not between a good job and a life of crime. The choice was between a life of invisibility and the immediate, dangerous status of the posse. The violence became more efficient. The weapons became more advanced. By the mid-1980s, the political wars of the previous decade looked like schoolyard scraps compared to the high-stakes warfare of the drug trade. The state tried to maintain a facade of control, but in the lanes and gullies of the capital, everyone knew who really held the keys to the kingdom. As the world moved into the 1990s, Jamaica attempted to present a new face to the global community. This was the era of liberalization, where the island's economy was opened up to the forces of the free market. On the surface, it was the time of the One Love brand. Tourism was booming, and the image of the sun-drenched paradise was marketed more aggressively than ever before. But beneath the glossy brochures, the reality of rising inequality was sharpening the edges of society. The gap between the villas on the hill and the zinc fences of the valley was widening. The drug money that had fueled the 80s was being laundered into legitimate businesses, creating a strange hybrid economy where it was often impossible to tell where the legal ended and the illegal began. The pressure of the crack cocaine era began to give way to something more subtle but equally destabilizing. By the turn of the millennium, a new phenomenon began to emerge from the rural parishes, specifically St. James. It was the lottery scam. It started small. A few young men with good English accents and access to lead lists would call elderly people in the United States, telling them they had won a fortune but needed to pay a processing fee to claim it. It was a clean crime compared to the bloody streets of the 80s, but its impact on the social fabric was devastating. It brought a sudden massive influx of wealth into communities that had been neglected for decades. The scammer became the new folk hero, a digital age Robin Hood, who was viewed by some as taking back the wealth that had been stolen from the Caribbean during the centuries of exploitation. This new economy created a fresh set of complications. The wealth was conspicuous. It manifested in fleets of high-end European cars and sprawling mansions built in the middle of modest villages. But where there is easy money, there is always violence. The lottery scamming trade brought with it a new wave of internal conflict, as rival groups fought over lead lists and territory. The state's response was often reactive and heavy-handed, further alienating the youth, who saw the police as an obstacle to their only path out of poverty. Our history in this period is a study in contradictions. We were a nation exporting more culture and music than ever before, while simultaneously struggling to contain an underground economy that was threatening to swallow the formal one. The spirit of resistance that once fueled the fight against slavery was now being channeled into a desperate, high-tech hustle for survival. The tension between the shadow state and the official government finally reached a breaking point in May 2010. The world watched as the Jamaican security forces launched a massive operation in Tivoli Gardens. The objective was the arrest of Christopher Dudas Koch, the son of the original Shower Posse founder and the most powerful don on the island. The United States had issued an extradition request, and after months of political stalling, the Jamaican government was forced to act. What followed was a military incursion that left over 70 civilians dead and a community traumatized. It was a moment of national reckoning. The walls of the garrison had been breached, but at a cost that forced every Jamaican to look in the mirror. It was the final violent end to the era of the untouchable Don. In the years following the Tivoli incursion, Jamaica has pushed toward a vision of modern stability. We see the expansion of highways, the growth of the business process outsourcing sector, and a renewed focus on global logistics. The island is positioning itself as the hub of the Caribbean, a place of order and opportunity. Yet the shadows of the past remain persistent. The old power structures did not simply vanish. They evolved. The violence that was once centralized under powerful dons has become more fragmented and unpredictable. The economic pressures that drive young men toward the hustle are still present, and the global demand for the island's illicit exports has not wavered. Survival remains the primary objective for a significant portion of the population, and that survival often requires navigating a landscape where the rules of the state and the rules of the street still coexist. Our journey through these decades reveals a profound continuity. Whether it was the political gunman of the 80s, the international drug runner of the 90s, or the digital scammer of the 2000s, the underlying motivation has remained the same. It is a quest for agency in a system that has historically denied it. Modern Jamaica is a nation of incredible resilience, standing at the crossroads of its traumatic history and its potential for a peaceful future. The question that remains for us is what happens to the Jamaican identity when the old pillars of power are removed. As the state slowly reclaims the territory once held by the Dons, it must also provide the social support and economic hope that those Dons once exploited. The legacy of the last 40 years is not just a story of crime. It is a story of a people determined to endure, no matter how many times the world shifts beneath their feet.